Hello, welcome! Season 2, Confessions of an Aging Ingenue. I'm Jenny Tooley, your aging ingenue. I'm so excited that you're here today. Before we jump on into this episode, I wanted to let you know I have made a new treat for you. It's the Interactive Companion Guide for Season 1. Yes, Interactive Companion Guide, Confessions of an Aging Ingenue, Season 1. Jump on over to jennytooley.com to get more information. We're also going to be offering a mentorship program this year, so make sure that you are getting your monthly newsletter so that you can get all the insider tips and info. All right, what you've been waiting for? Here we go. Hey everybody, Jenny Tooley here with Confessions of an Aging Ingenue. I'm so glad to be back with season 2. This season I have guests and I am so excited because today I have Jessica Sloan with me, and I'm just going to intro with, have I told you about the time that I had the most awesome agent ever? That would be Jessica Sloan, and she's here with me today. Hey Jessica, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. Quite an intro. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, reading the bio is like, but I know most of the people I talk to, so I get to actually introduce them like I know them.
Which is yay!
And so, yeah, you are my agent for over 10 years.
Yeah.
My Austin agent since, I think, from 2008-ish, 2009-ish to 2020-something, 21, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think you moved soon, a little before I left. And then I remember when you came in, Laura wasn't there yet. I know that too. And I remember Bottle Rocket really well. And she's like, she was a Bottle Rocket. And we were like, yes. So yeah, all of that.
It's so funny what people remember, you know? Who knew that Bottle Rocket was going to be like something that people still remember that movie?
Right.
Like, yes, I was in that movie. So when I was with y'all, I did Boyhood and The Night Shift, a couple of indie features, and I did a lot of auditions for things like Fear the Walking Dead. A lot of things I did not get booked on, which later I was probably like, you know what? That's just not, it's not just my, it's not my acting brand. So, how did you get to be an agent? That's where we're going to start. And then we're going to move into what you're doing today, because I'm really excited to hear about your new venture.
Yeah, I started by interning just pretty much anywhere and everywhere I could. It's this year, it'll be 20 years when I was started an internship at Austin Film Society, and that's kind of where it all began. And since Rick has such a part of Austin Film Society, during my internship, it was over the summer, and I think he still does, maybe not as a 4th of July party. And I remember being a volunteer at his 4th of July party and was kind of blown away of his house and was like, oh, wow, he has a baseball field in the middle of his land and all this stuff. And I thought it was so cool.
So you're talking about Rick, right?
Rick, yes. Yes. Later. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, you're good. Rick. We all know who Rick is. But
Rick is.
Okay, so he has a baseball field. I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, at least at this house he does. I'm sure he has multiple houses. In fact, I knew at least when I interned he had multiple houses, so it should still remain true. That made me want to intern for him, and so I ended up interning after AFS at his production company. And then I went to Troublemaker, and I started as an intern in PR there. It's technically under Miramax, but we were at Troublemaker Studios. And then I got hired at Troublemaker, and that was interesting in a lot of me kind of finding my way.
Who is Troublemaker? Is that?
Oh, Richard, Robert
Rodriguez?
Rodriguez. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, you're good.
Yes. And I met a lot of people and I got to do a lot of things, and it was never a place for me. I was never going to find my footing there. And somebody mentioned casting along the way, and I was like, that's where I want to go. And so I, Elizabeth Avion, Robert's ex-wife, hooked me up with Beth Sepko, and that's where I first started with her. I started as a extras casting, but not even the coordinator yet. I was just working in extras casting. And I found Heather Collier from Collier Talent Agency at the same time. And I started as an intern with Heather for the summer. And then, because I knew nothing about agenting, and when she was like, I don't have a job, but you can be my intern, I just kind of threw up my hands. I was like, okay, you might as well try it. And so I really enjoyed it, but by the end of the summer, I was like, listen, I love doing this, but like I have to get paid. Like I can't not get paid anymore and pass that and just need some type of income somehow, some way. And so she did. And I kind of just never left. And when it was kind of a flip of a coin too of what I was going to do full time, whether it was casting or whether it was agenting. And at that time where I had to make a decision, it so happened to be when we had the four shows. We had The Good Guys. We had, oh God, it was Kelly Giddish and Cole Hauser in Dallas that I'm now not thinking of what it is. We had another show that now I can't remember either. Anyway, we had four shows. We'll
Right,
just leave it
right.
at that. And that was exciting and a lot. Only one show really made it, which was The Good Guys, and even that was like had a short run, I feel. And because nothing really happened, it kind of the flip of the coin ended up going to Heather full time and working as an agent full time. So the four shows were in town, and I didn't know where to go of which way of casting or agenting. I knew it was going to be have to be one or the other at that point of how everything was going. And then Heather got pregnant for with her first baby, and that's when I became full time at the agency. And Laura came in like I think she might have been pregnant or right before she got pregnant. And so Laura was there when the pregnancy, which is now like 13 years ago, 14 years ago. It's been quite a while, so it's definitely not yesterday by any means. But then I only agented and was in the agenting realm. And somewhere in between, when Laura came or right before Laura came, I got the voiceover section. She was like, here, have voiceover. You can do a lot with it. And I said, great. And I went to a class just really to know what you would be doing as a voiceover artist, because I at that point I had no idea and didn't have the technical skills of I have an ear, but like I didn't know. So it was very helpful, that class, and I'm glad I did it. But then, technology changes, everything changes where I'm just like, you know what? Let's ask the Google and see what it says as far as best technology to use, because I can't, and my brain just doesn't work that way. But voiceover was also a lot of fun all this long with on camera. So it was I did enjoy agenting for quite a while. And then I just kind of stupid Texas stuff and SAG stuff where I was paying for my own insurance, and that gets expensive after a while. And I was to the point where I needed things to happen getting older.
Right. So financially, you needed some things to happen.
And so I started kind of going to SAG and looking around and seeing, hey, can you, if we're not SAG franchised, Austin as a whole isn't SAG franchised, although Collier wanted to be in easily, you just can't have one agency. It has to be multiple agencies coming together, and it's a whole to do as being franchised, and they have to, I don't even re know, but they have to go through all the qualifications, and there's amendments and blah blah blah. So it can take a long time, and I think we applied either 2018 or 2019, and then of course COVID hit, and then everything changed. And I don't know if it was ever picked up again or what, but during this time it was 2022, where I was feeling all this and all this stuff was coming, and I also had an impromptu kind of intervention with my friends where they were like, you know what, Jessica, you're worth more than what you're getting and all the stress you're putting on. And it made me stop and think of like, you know what, you're right, after tears. And then it was some tough love, but then they immediately hugged me after. It was a needed intervention. I didn't know that at the time, but it changed kind of my mindset. And so, looking into SAG and doing all the stuff, and they were like, it sucks, but no, we can't help you. And I was like, but I've shown my loyalty, I'm doing this, like, you there's no way to help. And they're like, I'm sorry, there's no way to help. And so something had to change somewhere. I also, Heather and I somehow lost our way of communicating with each other. I also blame COVID on that, of just being on your own, doing your own thing, not being in the same room with somebody that you can lose that connection. And then when we re-entered, like, things have already changed, and so it was hard to get back. And I also wanted a life. And agenting, you're on 24/7, 365. I carried my computer wherever I went just because I never knew, or I was waiting for an audition to come in to get out, or I was waiting for an email to be able to book somebody. And it was always something where I had to bring my computer with me. And I was just tired of that life. And then I had a great vacation in Thailand. And so I, after, after travel, you kind of get wiser. I don't know how it happens, but you do. And coming home, I was like, no, it's the job's not going to change. I need to change. And so that's when I started really looking for another job. And I, at the time, I didn't tell Heather or Laura about what I was looking at and doing. But then January came around, of 2023, and the market was so slow here that something had to give somehow, some way. And so I was already looking for a job and a new job. So I'm like, I'll be the one. I'll nominate myself. And
So
that's kind of how.
your pay and their pay depended on how the market was doing as far as acting in the industry in Texas.
Because we only got paid on commission, the whole agency. There was no, like, we didn't have people pay for a website or do anything else. So all of the income came from the commission. So when the market was that slow, it was very hard on all of us. And it's not just our agency, it was entire Texas. We were all like, come on. Like, something's got to give somehow, some way. And then so I left in January in the on-camera department, and then I completely left in May, because I was gonna open a business with somebody else, and that didn't happen. We tried, but the way we work and who we are polar opposites. So it just didn't work out. But I learned a lot from it, and I got the confidence to be like, hey, I can do this. Like, I can open a business. It sounds scary, but in reality, it's just a bunch of check marks of like what you have to do. And it's easier than you think. And with what I do, it's not, I didn't need a lot of upfront money. Like it's all online, it's all Zoom, or I go to a place and teach. So it's, you don't have to have an office. It's not like I'm opening a restaurant where you have to have a restaurant and then buy all the supplies and hire all the people. It's really quite easy in comparison. So I was like, oh, this is great. And so I decided that's what I was going to do. And my business is called First Take, and it's all about the business of acting, and it's a consulting firm advising on the business side of everything of acting and on being on camera. I know some theater, but really it's primarily on camera and voiceover.
All the
And
things that
it's
you've been
really
doing.
right,
Yeah, right. All
basically,
the things you've been doing and
except
all this knowledge that you had carried over.
And except for the not agenting part, I don't have to submit. I don't have to send out auditions. I don't have to book people and wait for the offers to come in. It's honestly fantastic because it was my favorite part of agenting is talking to the talent, is advising, is all that stuff. So I've had some. I opened in January 4th, 2024. And it's been good so far. I've been lucky to have some people, a good foundation where people, when I sent it out, people came in and was like, yes. Or like, yes, but I have to raise some money. I'll get to you, I promise. And so but so I also had surgery a few weeks ago, and so that made me slow down and like take a breath before I do my second half of and second phases and second round of marketing and all that fun stuff. So it's been fun so far. It's stressful because you're like, okay, I'm ready for money. But I also am patient enough to know that it's going to come. And quite honestly, I like doing it so much. Every time I've done it, I'm like, that was fun. Let's do it
Well,
again.
good,
Where
good.
I feel like even if it is like a part-time job or it becomes a part-time job, that's fine. At least I'm doing, having some joy, some output somewhere, So, I by all means, I'm not closing now. And definitely giving it a year, if not longer, to have fun and play. Because, again, coming from scratch, opening a business from scratch is hard. Even if you have a network, it's still hard. So, you gotta do the things before you give up.
And it takes time to get some traction. And I have also found like I've been creating my business for like 10 years now. But then I have to find the right way, the right way for me to do it and to like understand what I want to be doing and the best way that I can do it. And this last year has been a lot about there's a an entrepreneurship program at Cornell that Bank of America hosts, and it's for women, and I was able to do that for free. You might want to look that up.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And it was like 3 months long, and it's just every 2 weeks we had a new different course that we did. And that was, even though I'd done all these boot camps, that was the thing that finally just formed the whole business in one big chunk. And I'm still trying to understand what it is. Okay. But okay, so I heard a lot in there that I wanted to touch back on. One of them, the first thing I popped in on was under earning. That was a huge one for me. It's taken me probably 10, 15 years of consistent work to get won my head around what under-earning is for me, that I was doing it and then like practicing internally so that my mindset was changed, and then waiting for the world outside of me to change. And I think you went through some of that with me during our time together. Like when you said on which one was it? As far as the eye can see, you were like, why don't you do an offer only? And I don't think I've talked about that on a podcast.
Did I say that to you?
Yeah, we were. So, as far as the eye can see, indie budget, I was in Dallas at the time. It was shooting in Austin, and it was paying like $100 a day, which is a SAG contract, right? And they were finding a way, which it seems like everybody does now, so that you can work around the SAG contract so that you only have to pay for local hires, even if somebody's coming in from out of town. And so it means you don't have to cover their hotel and all their expenses. So it was $100 a day, and that was flat it. And I was like, I cannot go down there and audition twice, and then if I get it, get paid a hundred for a one day shoot, $100, and pay for everything else. Like the cost benefit on this has completely, like, I'm paying to be an actor now. And I think I did the audition, and we're going through the callbacks, and you're like, they want you to come down for a callback. And I was just like, I just can't. Like, I did my five finger death punch, and it came out to be like a 2 out of 5 or something. And I was like, and you're like, well, maybe do an offer only. And I was like, what is an offer only? Like, I hadn't even heard of what that was before. I was like,
I
can I?
honestly, thanks for reminding me. I'm sure I said this, but I said so many things too that I'm just like, I said that. Did I
You
say that?
did, you did. I'm
But
so glad you said it. Because I've been in the industry for 20 years, it never occurred to me that I could say, hey, yeah, I'll do it if you want me to do it, but I'm not going to audition for you again. And I got booked on it. And then you were willing to sit and negotiate a hotel room and gas. And I got taken care of reasonably well. But that was a big part of my under-earning journey, like knowing that I was worth that and that it could be possible.
Yeah, totally. I always think, what is the worst thing they can say? It's no. And if you're not afraid of getting the answer no, you might as well try. So, thank you for reminding me, but like I knew you're in Dallas. I knew the budget. These type of things can happen. Could I do that for you on a major television show? Probably not, but on this indie, absolutely. Again, the worst thing for you is to be like, okay, not gonna take the part. That's fine. It would cost me more to do it anyway. So, there was no fear of no. So, it gave us a lot of leverage because no one was afraid of hearing the word no. And
I
that's
think as an actor, though, I was still on the edge of hearing the word no.
Yeah.
I had this thing in my head that said, oh, I have to do it no matter what. Think a lot of actors come from that desperation place. And we had a situation like that on Boyhood as well, over a day of pay that had gotten, the day had gotten screwed up on the schedule, and they forgot to cancel us. And I remained firm about getting paid for that day, and that was really scary for me. And I think as actors, we're just willing to let it go.
Well, and I think it also depends on the situation. Boyhood did become a family and became a thing. And it was such a new thing at the time too. Nobody's ever heard of, making a movie over 10 years until that came out. And it was just like you said, it was a day or two every year. Like it wasn't a whole lot. However, again, as agents, we're there to protect our clients, and we're your advocate. And if you don't get paid a day, that's important, and we do what we can. We're not, sometimes we're miracle workers, but not always. Like again, what's the harm of being like going to them and being like, no, you have to pay, or we're going to SAG, or we're doing this or whatever. And of course, you don't want to be the one that like makes the fuss, but at the same time, like if you don't, who else will? So, I just, I have an agent brain, clearly, and it comes in every once in a while of like, when we rent a location for an event, I'm like, where's the insurance? Do we have this? Do we have, like, that's the first thing I think of versus like, oh yeah, this would be pretty and blah blah blah. So my agent brain is always like, no, you have to get paid and we're gonna try, and again, if they say no, they say no, and then you move on and you're like, that sucks, we should have been paid. But if you don't try, you'll never know. And that's kind of, again, my agent brain going. I should take my own advice sometimes.
I was going to ask you that. Are you able to do that for yourself? You said you had an intervention with your friends.
Not so much, no. To be honest, I do need to take my own advice. I'm a natural cheerleader for other people, but when it comes to me, I'm my worst critic and my worst enemy, and can beat myself up for no reason at all. And some things I just said just last week, I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. Why didn't I say that? And I'm like, no one really cares. And if they cared, they cared in a second and they moved on with it, so I do think, not to segue into this, but I think it's part of my anxiety, of dealing with all this and how I cope. I make mountains and from molehills sometimes in my brain. So like, again, not realizing that I was like, why don't you do offer only, Jenny? Like that to me was not anything. It's just something I'm like, why do you should think about this? But for me, I probably wouldn't have ever said that. I'm just learning my worth. And it's taken, this long of my life to figure it out, and I'm still not there. I'm still not anywhere close, but I do realize, bad relationships and toxic relationships far more now than I did previously. Like with the last business venture, it only took 2 months to realize. And so that to
That's
me, I was like,
great.
it's growth. It's
It's growth. It's totally growth. You didn't stick it out for like 10 or 20 years and
No. And like, and I'm honestly too loyal to like to a fault, that I think, okay, I can, like, I know I can't change anybody else, but I'm like, oh, they'll give in, they'll do this, it'll change, blah blah blah. And it's not, like, it's just not. So like, if you don't like it at the beginning, then don't get involved,
Oh man, that's so true.
and I'm still learning that. I'm not perfect by any means, but like, again, growth with 2 months versus, how many ever years, that it's a difference. So I'm slowly getting there, and I'm slowly like appreciating the things, and the changing of the guard, as you will, of my life, of like coming from this thing to this new life. And when I left, just the on-camera part, my first thought, my first feeling was freedom. And I don't think that's like a normal thing that you feel. But ever since then, I still feel free, and I'm free to, like, just today I had a meeting with it's for profit, but it's an art community, and they're trying to build, all these things and have events and open galleries and all this stuff. And like, I would have never been able to do that meeting before. And now here I am, just like running into people saying, oh, I don't know your organization, let me meet you, and blah blah blah. Like, and it's a part of growing the business, but it's also growing the community in Austin. And I just feel I feel like I lived in my little bubble for so long that, not even just like the breath that I get to take in general, but just the combining of the communities I get to do and I get to be a part of. Again, it was never an option. And I'm in a leadership program now that I would never been able to do. And just these things that like I get to give back and give to the community is awesome. I really like doing it. I'm proud to do it. And again, I have the freedom to do it too.
Yeah, I hear you. That's one of the struggles I had with the industry was low man on the totem pole. I have to have a mindset as an actor that I have to show up anytime, anywhere, any way possible when somebody calls. And what kind of life does that leave for me? And my goal has never been to be an actor. My goal has been to live a well-rounded life. So those two things were really at odds with each other.
And it all depends on what you want. If you decided no, acting is this important, there is a balance there. You just I think with you of just talking today, you had a fear of saying no, and as an actor, you can't. You can't have that fear. You have to be able to say no. Otherwise, again, burnout, and then you're doing things you don't want to do. You're saying yes to things you would never say yes to in quote unquote real life. So like, why would you do it in your acting life? So it's one of the things that I want to help and actors learn and do and feel is like, no, you are your captain. You are your commodity. And if you don't want to do it, then why? Why would you do it? You wouldn't take a job with a criminal. So why would you take or that like belittles you or do whatever? Some people can work with Gordon Ramsay and get yelled at all the time. Some people can't. It's just the things. I personally can't. I hate yelling. I can't handle yelling. So like that's the worst environment for me. And why would I apply for Hell's Kitchen if I was a chef, which I'm absolutely not, when I know that I can't handle yelling, so it's the same thing as an actor. If you don't like the story or if you don't feel the character, why would you say yes to something that you don't feel to? Now, I understand that sometimes that's a luxury, like, and you kind of need the money and all that stuff, but like also morally, ethically, like what do you want as your brand? If that doesn't work for you, then again, why say yes? So I'm hoping to teach actors that they can say no. And again, not everything. Sometimes you do have to suck it up and do the things, but when you're auditioning and you're not feeling the character, then you're not feeling the character, if your agent pushes back and says something to you, it depends on the situation, again, if it's against your morals and ethics to do it, don't do it. Like this, that's not going to change. But if it's like, oh, well, Spike Lee's directing this versus, somebody else. So that's the interpretation of it, and so it's not like this, racist sort of thing. It's really, Spike Lee's take on it. So, it's different and people would be like, oh, okay, well, that I get, that I could play, that I understand. I just don't want to be that person on the other side and actually mean it, but if somebody still said no, it's just like, okay, you did, that's fine. You don't have to be involved. That's totally fine. Even if it's Spike Lee, okay, like again, as an agent, you can't be a moral and ethic police. You just can't. Everybody has different boundaries and different lines, so you just kind of have to adapt to each person and what they're like. And I don't approve of the agents that say you must do this or you're getting dropped. And it's like, well, fine. In my opinion, I'm like, fine, drop me. I did, clearly this relationship isn't what I wanted it to be anyway.
I went through so in 19 something, 99, I had moved from Dallas where I was kind of at the top of my game and people were just calling, right, to New York. where I got called into a bunch of agencies and talked to people. And I think, where did I get called into? Some of the bigger agencies. And of course, nobody took me. And then I just had this period of time where I was just like, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I had a small nervous breakdown at age 26. And that's when I went off to write my film and became a yoga teacher and did all these other things. And I came back to the industry on my own terms, slowly but surely, only working with people that I wanted to work with. I only was going to have an agent when I moved to Austin in 2008. There were two agents that I was looking at. It's like, I'm not going to go with anybody but these two agents. And then I talked to Heather and I was like, holy crap. My first agent ever was like, you can't do art and do industry. You know, you're going to be an artist and you're not going to do well in the industry. And then I talked to Heather and she was like, oh, I have people do all different kinds of stuff. You know, if you have a day job, it's fine. If you want to be a full-time actor, that's great. And I was just like, I don't want to do commercials. And she's like, that's fine. It's like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? So it's interesting, like that journey for me. And I remember sitting in Real Women when Real Women was still in Austin and doing this speed dating thing. It was a mentor speed dating thing. And these young women, at the time they were young women, I guess, to me, were coming up to me. They were a little younger than I had been at that time where everything kind of crashed for me. And they would say, okay, so what do I need to do, you know, with my headshot or with my resume? What is like, there's always this perfect thing that you're gonna do that's gonna get you the job, right? And it's like, I always came back to be yourself. Just walk into the room and be you. And they would look at me like I'd lost my mind, you know. What hair color do I need? No. You know.
Yes, and that's true. In a way, like people in this market, and I think that's the other thing with Heather, is this market is completely different in New York, in LA, because you have to almost have a daytime job in order to fulfill your creative outlet, whatever it is. Because very, very little people could survive just on acting alone. It happens, but it's very few and far between. So, you know, because you have to have a day job and because it has to be flexible and all these different rules with acting, I think an agent here is a lot more lenient than an agent in New York and LA, where they expect you to drop anything at any moment, and that is your job. But there's also tons more jobs in each location than there is in Austin too. So there's that. But the other half of things is, you know, it you do have to be you. And I think sometimes when you go to a bigger market, like it opens people's eyes of like, oh, I get it. You know, like, oh, this is, I did have a lot of opportunities in Texas where now I'm fighting just to get, you know, my foot in the door as far as an agent or a manager, where in Austin, I had like, I was getting auditions left and right, and I can't even get, you know, an agent in LA or New York or, you know, fill in the blank. And I think, you know, it's just a mindset where you figure out once you're you figure out that that's how you get booked, because people really, you know, I hate to say don't care, but they don't ultimately. They just want the perfect person to do the job correctly and the way they see it. So that's a problem with tapes right now, is because everything's being booked off of tapes, that you don't know how many takes it got or how much coaching somebody got or how their expertise, even though their resume is right next to you, people see the audition and it's like, that person, you know, they did it perfectly. That's what I see. Instead of being in a room with somebody where you get to play and direct, redirect and see all these different things, if they can take a redirect, you don't get that opportunity in the tapes. So there's been issues with people getting on set and being like, and having not such a great time because they picked the person that gave the perfect audition versus the perfect person. So, it's a little different now, but at the same time, it's the same thing. Like you being you is ultimately, acting. I'm preaching to the choir. I know you know this, but like you as a character, you are there's always still some you within that character. And if you don't bring that part of it out and you just go the straight, it looks like you're acting and it doesn't look real and doesn't look authentic. So you have to figure out how you become into this character and what your type is and how you get in this character and blah blah blah. So, basically I'm affirming with what you said of like, yeah, just be you and you'll be fine. Whoever you are.
That's when I booked stuff, is when I would walk in and I'd have some weird thing on, or and that's how I booked Boyhood. Is we had a conversation. He just had us read the audition piece was from a Lifetime movie that I had auditioned for like a month prior. The sides were from a Lifetime movie that wasn't even the character, right, that we were going to be playing. And then we talked. And what got me booked was I decided instead of being the cookie biter or the Coca-Cola sipping girl that I had learned to be at a very young age, with that perfect whatever and having the perfect answer, I just answered honestly about whatever he asked. And that's what Ethan Hawke told me when I met him. He said, Richard knew exactly who it was. He sent me three people. He said, I know which one it is. Which one do you think it is? And Ethan was like, it's her. And he was like, yes. And it had to do for Ethan about this thing I was talking about, how hard it was to live in New York, and that I had used to do experimental theater. Like in the late 90s, I would never have walked in to talk about my experimental theater work in Dallas. But it was those things that got me booked on that role. And I think it's hard. I don't know anymore, but I think for women of my age that came out of that time period, it was really hard, where there were very specific standards that were being set up that we had to meet. And you just walk into a room and everybody looked alike. Everybody had on the same outfit. It was difficult.
Yeah, and it, people like Meryl Streep and those names, Helen Mirren, so many of the older agent seasoned whatever vintage whatever word you want to use, they said, oh, there's so many more parts now. Well, they're making parts for them as like a normal everyday actress, they're not making parts for you, and those parts still don't really exist here and there. And they do, but they also don't. It just depends on what you're looking for. But in average, and if you're talking on in broad terms, they're really not out there. So it's hard to come from this, again, this perfect ingenue type of background into like, oh, what am I now? You go through the grad school phase. You're not quite a mom yet, but you're not the young person yet. And then it becomes young mom. You're past the grad school, and then you're just a mom. And then like somehow, some way in our industry, you skip from mom to grandma in like a matter of like 5 years. And then you're just a character actor after that. Like it doesn't matter. You're just a character. So, it's hard. It's hard to like generalize and accept that's going to be your path. When you're not Meryl Streep or Helen Mirren or whatever, who's having things written for you. So in your defense, I think creating your own material and doing your own things is the way you have to do it. If you want to play certain things, then make it happen. And so this is kind of, again, going back full circle of taking your own advice. But it's kind of like I'm finally listening to myself of like, oh, well, if it's not out there for me and the job doesn't exist, then why don't I make the job myself? Like, this is what I can do. These are my skills. This is what I'm good at. So let's do it. But again, as an actor, you nowadays you kind of have to be a filmmaker too. Like, you're not just an actor. You have to produce, you have to write, you have to direct. Otherwise, you will never get the parts that you want. I don't say never because there are parts that come in and out, but again, in Texas, it can be far and few between. So if you aren't doing the in-between stuff, there's going to be long gaps when you don't work.
So, when you're talking to actors in Texas, how do you talk about the union? That was also a struggle I had as a youth. It was, oh, I have to get into the union. So I did. And then I, was in New York, so I had to be in the union. And then I came back to Texas, and that was a struggle to be in the union in Texas.
It's not a lie. However, I do just to give background if you don't know, but Texas is a right to work state. And it doesn't mean that SAG actors have the right to work on anything. It's actually not. It actually is the exact opposite. A right to work state, Global Rule One in SAG is still do not work on non-union projects. So unfortunately, you still have to abide by Global Rule One. However, in Texas, because it's right to work state, we have so much non-union stuff happening, where it's almost a disservice if you are a union member. However, this is my caveat, is that I think when you become a SAG member, there's a reason. You've earned your keep, you've earned your take, you've earned all the things. And so if you worked on a non-union project, they don't have to provide lunch breaks. They don't have to provide chairs for you. I mean, everything, and there's no like rules that you have to follow under that. And so it's you talked about it earlier, but it's so easy to fill out the paperwork to make things SAG to have, not necessarily better actors, but maybe so, you can argue that. But you have at least a lot more actors that can be a part of your project. And you don't have to necessarily pay that much. You think, oh, it's union, so therefore I have to pay, this amount of money to it. But you made $100 a day on a great movie. So it just depends on the thing, on the project, and it depends on people who fill out that paperwork. And I think, I pay more attention to at least films that do the paperwork than the films that don't do the paperwork. So I'd rather have actors do that than the non-union films. Now, non-union commercials, that's different, but that's a whole commercials are a whole different ball game to begin with. So film and television wise, for sure, I pay more attention to the SAG projects. Like, I wouldn't even really touch the non-union projects unless they paid well, and you're like, oh. And then you ask, well, why aren't you union? You actually don't have to pay this much to actors if you do that. But of course, we never said that. We were like, we'll take that extra. But it's again just not that hard, and I think it's a lot of people just not knowing what to do, and producers who've never filled out the paperwork before to figure out, or it's bless SAG, but sometimes it's not the easiest to communicate with or to understand. So it depends on the agent you talk to, really. But it's I get the hardships, but at the same time, like I feel like a union film has a certain degree of professionalism versus the non-union stuff, which I'm like, okay, well, SAG members deserve that, you know? So do you miss out on some things? Well, yes, but again, do you really want to work on those projects that don't follow those rules? It's it's another balancing act.
There's a lot of balancing acts, isn't there?
Yes. But
So with all
as far
this.
as Texas, you're not forced to join a union unless you work in a state that is a closed state. So you can stay eligible forever, really, in SAG. So, if somebody is dying to join, it's the okay, why? Like, is it status? Because if it's status, hold on a second. Be ready to move out of state or just like keep the eligibility and like that's fine. And when if you become a must join and you must join, then go ahead. That means it's the right time for you to join. Or it's people who may not be a must join, but just have been working in the industry for years and fed up with the non-union stuff. And that's fine too. I completely understand it. But you do have to kind of take a step back of like, I am going to get less stuff. You have to take that into consideration. But you can also go FICOR. SAG really frowns upon that. But it is a possibility. To me, it depends on what you want to do. Like if you're on camera, I wouldn't suggest it, but if you're voiceover, and you're just doing voiceover, like why not? Everything's non-union pretty much in the voiceover world anyway, so go for it. They're gonna try to convince you to stay with every
Oh, they will
means.
convince you to stay. If you go look that up online, you're gonna get blacklisted and all this stuff, and it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah,
Because
and it's not true. They don't have the time nor the bandwidth to do it, so it's fine. But
they're
like
not
at the
coming
same
after
time,
me.
you have to be prepared of like, going into a car dealership. If you're not going to get the right price, then I'm walking away. Like it's the same thing. Just stay focused. Don't let them persuade you and you'll be fine.
So you talked about you had mentioned anxiety earlier, and I'm hearing about all these balancing acts and all these, things that we need to do. And for me, it's really been about like what you just said. It's not just for me focus. It's like getting grounded within myself, so I know what I need, and that it's okay for me to go out there and get what I need or ask for it. If I'm grounded like that, I don't have as much anxiety. Like if I'm standing up for myself within myself, like I used to abandon myself a lot. And I've had to learn how to be trustworthy for myself again, that I will follow through for my best interests and things like that. And I think that for me has helped a lot with my anxiety and my mental health in general. I'm going into menopause, so I've also got all this hormonal craziness happening. So for you, how has your journey with anxiety, how did it show up, and where do you feel like you're at with it right now?
Well, it's crazy. I don't think I realized how bad my anxiety was until I was older. Like I really started in my teens and I didn't have names for it. I didn't understand what I was feeling. I mean, everything everybody says about it, like I was that kid. And then come my mid to late 20s, I knew I had anxiety. I knew what I was feeling. I knew that like I was going down the spiral of depression, and I knew and felt all of it. I just, one, I didn't have a lot of money at the time, but two, I went in for a test to do one of those science things, the trials and all that stuff for medications. And they told me, they're like, yeah, you have anxiety, but it's not that bad. So you can't be on these meds because it's not that bad. Or you can't do the trial. And so for me, that's kind of what I thought. And I also didn't have insurance for the longest time too. So I was just like, okay, well, I can't afford it anyway. So it's neither here nor there. But it's also, the generational gap where my mom was like, yeah, you have anxiety, but you're coping with it well. And it's just like, okay, I'm like, I'm coping. And then finally, it took me for my sweet little dog, Penny, got really sick, like really, really sick. And she went through a battle of it in December of 2020. And then she went through another battle of it in 2021. And she ultimately passed in February of 2022, but there was a time where she always had eye issues, but you could see her brain like not functioning like it used to. And there was a point where she fell in the pool, and I luckily I was right close by, and I heard her like yip in a weird little way. And I immediately went outside and saw her in the pool and just jumped in. It was January, so it was freezing cold, of course, because worst conditions it had to be. But that's when I lost it. That's when I knew my anxiety, I couldn't handle it anymore. And I went to the doctor. I'm like, I can't do this by myself. And like basically all the check boxes of anxiety was like check, 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 except the depression part. I know when I'm depressed and when I'm not depressed. Whether I do anything about it, that's a whole different case. But like I knew at the time I wasn't depressed, and that was like the one box I didn't check. So she was like, yep, you're anxious, you have anxiety, you're definitely feeling it, and try this meds. And it took us a little while to find the right meds. And I've been on meds ever since. And at the beginning, I still had a lot of anxiety until she passed, because she was so sick. And then afterwards, I'm like, I found myself like not reacting immediately and like kind of absorbing what people said, and listened versus just reacting. And I'm like, hey, it's a thing. You're like, I didn't know I could do this. This is great. This feels great. And it kind of same with like emails, things got to be better, things got to be and I could just handle a lot of things better than I could previously, and realized, oh, I've had anxiety for a long time, and I should have been medicated a long time ago, no matter how bad it was or not. But it took me to like basically almost have a breakdown because my dog was gonna pass, that it took me to be like, nope, I cannot handle it anymore. And then just recently, last year, I saw Taylor Swift in Houston, and my friend just got diagnosed with ADHD. And then I started, she's during that trip down there, she's like, Jessica, you should get checked for ADHD. I'm like, what? And by the train, we are the trip coming back, I was like, fine, I'll get tested, but it's little things. It's like when I sleep, I kind of bend my wrist and like get all snuggled and pinning my wrist. And I had no idea that was part of diagnosing ADHD. It's a symptom. And there's how I can't stay on a story, and I'll start one story, start another, and then go back to the other story, and then go back to, like, I'm always everywhere at once. And I've never realized, I mean, I've heard other people have do that, but like mine is not, I'm not like the hyper kid. I'm pretty chill, I'm pretty relaxed. So I'm like, the hyper kid has ADHD, and somebody who's mellow as me can't have it. Then I like come to realize, no, it's my brain. My brain is like the hyper kid going bouncing off the walls, but my physical body isn't, and it's just a whole different thing. And since I've been diagnosed with ADHD too, that like things have calmed down. Like I feel like I can take a second. I don't have to answer everything all at once, and I can stay on topic, and I can like I still sleep with my wrist curled, but I'm like, oh, okay, I must be having an anxiety filled day, or something of the sort, where I'm recognizing what I'm doing more and understanding how I feel versus when I'm like, pre-diagnosis and all that stuff. So it's kind of one of those things where I look back and I'm like, God, if only I knew, because some of my emails sometimes just didn't make sense as much as I tried hard. And I would send these emails and people were like, what's wrong with you? Like, I don't understand what you're saying. And luckily those emails were like inner circle. So, they never really were out in the professional world. But at the same time, it's like, oh, again, that's the ADHD talking. And so like, I try to take my meds before I do anything that I have to do in a professional manner, so I know that I can like do it right. And if my brain's like a little scattered, I tend to be like, okay, I'm gonna take a second, let it get focused, and then I'll write that email. And again, it's about acknowledgement and knowing in my behalf, and understanding what's happening in my brain versus just like, oh, I feel a little fuzzy today. It's like, oh, I'm fuzzy because like I should be medicated. And I'm just also one of those people that's not afraid of medicine. I don't I believe in supplements too, but if you the supplements aren't working and you've tried that, that's great. But you should go to the meds if that's not working for you. But I also am the worst medicine. I'm horrible on medicine. I've never been good at taking anything, whether it's birth control or whatever. I tend to always have missed days or whatever. And so like I've also never like as a kid when I was little in preschool where my the person knew that I was taking some type of cold medicine and they're like, what's going on with Jessica? Is she okay? And she's like, well, she has a cold and she's taking medicine. And they're like, ah, that's what it is. Like, I'm super sensitive when I get on like that kind of meds, and I'm just not good with them. I would make the worst drug addict in the world because I can't do it. Like, my body won't let me, and I'm type A, so like I'm gonna be good at whatever I'm gonna do, and so I'm just like, no drugs for me. So just going back to the medications, like that's one reason why I'm like, yeah, today, like if you need it, you need it, take it.
I'm the same way with like I'm really sensitive to medications, and I have a history of being in situations with a lot of people who have been, on drugs, and who were addicts. So for me, medication became like this really scary thing. It always was something I didn't want to do. Like, it was never my go-to choice. But then over a period of decades, it became like almost a dangerous thing because I saw how it was affecting other people in my life and affecting mine because of it. So I think it's the end of 2020, I crashed, and my hormones, I was going into menopause, didn't really realize it. And I was having like these panic attacks, these cascading panic attacks for 2 or 3 days, where I would get into a panic attack. I would come back down. I'd almost fall asleep and my body'd start to relax, and boom, I was back up into a panic attack again. So after, 2 days with no sleep, a sick cat, right? The pet thing always comes into play somewhere. COVID, we were still in lockdown. People were like, Jenny, why don't you just go ahead and take maybe some Xanax? Go to the doctor, maybe take some Xanax just to get this, ease off a little bit. And I'm like, no, I can't possibly do that. My brain is m mortified about putting this into my body. And I think it maybe took me a couple of days of having some really in-depth conversations with friends and people who are in recovery, because I'm in 12-step recovery on the Al-Anon side about this stuff, and I finally agreed that I would take some lorazepam. And I took that first one really convinced I was going to die. And then I took it, and all of a sudden, like my stomach ache went away, the fuzz went away from my brain, like my brain cleared out. And I think I probably fell asleep. And then shortly after that, I had a, like I was in the car just crying, 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 crying. I know, crying. I've done so many different kinds of crying in my life. But this, I was like, this is not good crying, you know? And so they were like, let's just put you on some Zoloft. And I'm like, you know, ugh. And I got on that a few days later. It really helped balance me out. I had done so many years of so many things to try to manage anxiety, to try to manage probably what's been depression for my whole life, and obsessive thinking and all of these things. And I had done a really good job at it. But I had no idea. Once I took that Zoloft, my brain quieted down in a way that it had never quieted down before. And I had no idea I'd made such progress, but I didn't realize that it was still that bad. You know? So at one point it was really, really bad, and it got better and better and better. But it took that medication for me to realize, oh my God, I had been swinging from one end of an emotional scale to the other, and that was just normal. And to be in the middle was scary for a while. So I was like, I'm not feeling anything. And then I started realizing, no, that's normal. This is like normal. This is like a normal thing.
And for me, I just learned how to cope with it. Like I didn't you in your brain, if you don't know what normal is, then how what is your comparison? You know, like I didn't know that like everything that was happening was anxiety or was ADHD. If I could communicate how I was feeling, maybe I could have gotten there. But it was my friend noticing of my little motions and how I speak with of like nope. I see it in you, in order to be like, oh well, yeah, I guess I do have it. And it was never, again, a lack of focus. It was just always, sometimes I get really focused and deep dive and go into a zone. But it like you said, it's the talking, it's the fuzz in that in your head that you just don't even know that is there. I'm now allergic to bees. I have been stung so many times that I'm allergic. And the time I got stung, my whole arm swelled up. But I also like felt it in my brain, and I felt the fuzzy in my brain. And that's when I kind of correlated, oh, it doesn't have to be like this. Where, oh, I get it. And now I'm like, well, if I get stung by a bee again, thank God I haven't, or wasp, really, it's wasp. That, I know that I have to take off work. I have to stop what I'm doing. And it's not because, again, that I'm swelling up or need to go to the emergency room or anything of that, which I will, but it's the brain capacity. It's the fuzzy that I don't want people to see or to know that that's what I'm going through at the moment. And it is, I say it that like it's a bad word. I don't think having anxiety or ADHD are bad things. I don't, and people are afraid of having it and afraid of doing it, and that it's a bad word, and that you shouldn't say it, or you shouldn't tell people, or you shouldn't do all this stuff. And it's like, well, you know what? I guarantee, like, the most of this planet has anxiety, and yet they're not talking about it. Like, I'm not gonna be that person. I'm not scared of the word. Like, what is it gonna do to me? I'm actually more scared to have anxiety again and to be on the other side, and not knowing and not taking care of it versus taking care of it. So, And maybe that's me. Maybe I'm like the more bohemian, like tree hugger type. But I really feel that way, and I think the world will feel that way once people start acknowledging that they have it and that they take stuff for it. Because again, it's over half guaranteed, if not more.
Well, we're going to wrap it up here. Was there anything else you'd like to add today before we?
No, just come visit my website. It's www.firsttaketx.com. If you have any questions at all about the business side of acting, come talk to me. No matter where you are, I'll do my best to help you. And if I can't help you, I'll be the first person to tell you, like, oh, I don't know that, but I can tell you this. Yeah, just come say hi.
Fantastic. And you know what else I'm hearing here is not just that you help people with the business side of acting, but also these other struggles that we have as actors, like our confidence and how we fit into the business and finding our footing. And I really appreciate that.
Absolutely, and no problem. I'm glad to be here. I don't know if it's taught everywhere, and it really should. It really, really should.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Jessica. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, Jenny. Really appreciate it. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening today. I'm so glad to have you with me. Ooh. If something resonated with you, I sure hope that you'll take that and expand on it in your own life. Maybe you can apply it to something that's going on with you right now. If you really want to get in on the good magic, I'd head over to jennytooley.com and grab up an interactive companion guide for season one and check out the mentorship program because that's where the magic's gonna happen. All right, subscribe, join, yay! Love you.